Can I credit you to the reason drifting is here in the United States?
Definitely the scaling up of drifting and where it is today. In 2003, we had a small marketing company. We brought D1GP to the US. At that time, they were probably in their second or probably their third season.
How did you go from co-founder of Formula D to now the general manager of PRI?
We created something from nothing. FD became the, I think, the second largest social media footprint of all motorsports, you know, in America. And we were able to do a lot with very little. Is there something that can be added, enhanced to what PRI and what, you know, the organization as a whole is doing? And I think that's kind of the mutual desire to, like, all right, what can we do?
And our special guest today, Jim Liao, general manager of PRI and co-founder of Formula Drift. Sleep Race Podcast, live from the PRI trade show here in Indianapolis. My co-host and partner, Frankie Five, and our special guest today, Jim Liao, general manager of PRI and co-founder of Formula Drift. Thank you for taking the time.
What's happening?
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Good,
thanks
good.
For joining us. We know you're a busy guy here.
It's been a busy 3 days.
It's all right.
You know? This is your second time around?
This is my third show as
third
general
show.
Manager.
Okay. So we'll go a little bit backwards here. I mentioned co-founder of Formula Drift. Can I credit you to the reason drifting is here in the United States?
Maybe not. I wouldn't take the credit to have drifting here in the US, but definitely the scaling up of drifting and where it is today. I mean, not myself, but definitely a great team of people that put it together. And like anything, right? Like a sport, it's a participant. So without the drivers, whether they were past and current drivers, you know, without their participation, obviously the sport wouldn't be where it is.
With my knowledge and history of the past of when Formula D started over 20 years ago, prior to Formula D, you brought D1GP over to the United States, and D1GP was the drifting sanctioning body in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of it's like just, I guess, good fortune or just things happen to work out for itself. Yes, so in 2003, we had a small marketing company. We brought D1GP to the US. At that time, they were probably in their second or probably their third season. They wanted to do an exhibition event here in the US. We were able to bring them here.
What track did that go to?
That was at Irwindale. And you know, I give them credit. It was they that spotted, you know, a short course oval that said, hey, we can do something here, run the banks, do some infield, and we want to run this exhibition competition in the US. And it'd be great publicity. It's, you know, PR stunt, whatever it is. And we got the green light to host it. And you know, for a year, I mean, right now you think like drifting is almost kind of hand in hand with like, you know, JDM or import car performance, car culture. But even at that time, within, you know, the import car world, like nobody knew what drifting was. So we had to educate and promote and talk about drifting. And then finally we got the put on the event. It was a success. It was a great event.
How did that fall onto your plate? Like how did Jim and D1 tie together?
Well, we were doing a lot of work and, you know, my, you know, all our roots, right? Like come from, you know, the import and import drag racing days. And we dealt with a lot of JDM companies. So the Apexes and the HKSs and, you know, Yokohama Advans of the world. And it's through a lot of good friends and their home, you know, offices that recommended us to do that. And so they made the intros. We went, had meetings, you know, and basically got the deal.
So yeah, he had actually IDRC back in the day. You guys were able to bring out Tarzan with that single, that center drive Integra.
Yeah.
That was at Maple Grove in the early 2000s.
And the R33,
right.
But that center drive Integra was pretty awesome. I've been fortunate. I learned a lot along the way. Even back to that, like my first internship was with a publishing company. They printed a lot of my magazines, including Sport Compact Car and European Car. And that was where I kind of cut my teeth and got thrown into the industry. You know, a tribute to just a lot of, you know, great support, like Greg Gill that runs SRO, the GT America series. He was the VP of sales that gave me that internship. He's here at the show today and still supporting and contributing to the industry. So those are awesome things. But yes, leading to like IDRC, like, you know, we're trying to do different things with import drag racing and take, you know, teams, you know, coastal and, you know, west to east and trying to go to different tracks and trying to bring in international drivers as well. And brands like Apex, you know?
Yeah, those are very familiar OG Japanese
shows our age too, because me and my brother were at that event at Maple Grove and we have printed 35mm printed photos of the cars and us standing with Tarzan. Yeah, that was wild.
And then also, you, in specific to IDRC, you did that team challenge. It didn't really last that much, but we actually raced in that. So we saw it in a Turbo magazine, or remember back in the day, some sort of, there's a team challenge. We got to do this.
Yeah.
And when you guys came to ATCO IDRC, you guys had the team challenge, and there was only two teams that showed up. It was us and another team. And they all had Honda Accords, and then we brought our Civics and Supras. They were like, okay, this is not going to go well.
Smoked them, needless to say.
Yeah.
So we're backdating ourselves, because IDRC days, the heydays of the import scene, the way that we learned about the culture was through magazines. Internet websites weren't even in existence yet. Going back to those heydays, you mentioned you had your internship starting in media. Can you bring us through your career from there up until Formula D?
Sure. Always loved cars. Didn't know if there was a career and didn't know anything about marketing. Got the internship and I was literally like flipping ads, tracking them. Oh, who's advertising with us? Who's not advertising with us? That's literally my work. And at that company was printing something like two dozen magazines. So it just all day I'm just flipping through everything from, you know, Chevy Performance and Popular Hot Rodding and Hot Bike Magazine. And those are all, you know, in that company. And that's like, you start there, right? Like you're just learning. And when they offered to, when I graduated college and said, hey, you want to come do ad sales? Like, yeah, let's do it. Right. You're kind of dialing for dollars and you got to get out there. And so I'm the most junior guy. It's like, oh, if there's a car show, you should go and go see if you can collect cards. Hey, there's a drag race. Go collect cards. And as a part of that, again, kind of like, man, like there's, you kind of open yourself up to opportunity. Like, oh, well, if they didn't do that, made me do that, I wouldn't have gone to all these places. And like see how dynamic events were and learn about or be curious about how they put those on and obviously meet more people. And so fortunate, right? Like, you know, you guys talk about like throughout the years, like there's people that have been, you land and connect in different places and like, you know, people that promoted car shows are now in industry. Like it's really cool. And so, you know,
a good reason not to burn bridges in this industry.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the such a small world.
Yeah.
And even in motorsports community with, you know, dozen plus genres of racing,
there's crossover.
And it is a lot smaller than people expect it to be. And you see a trade show like this and there's, you know, tens of thousands of people, like it's small. Don't burn your bridges. Be a productive and positive person. I went from magazines and then I went to work for IDRC and we were doing drag racing and that was really cool. I didn't really see the operations of like a racing side of
what
the
was business. Your position at IDRC?
I did sponsorship sales.
Okay.
So
okay.
I was kind of doing the same thing I was doing at the magazine, but really learning from the team from, hey, you know, how do you write a rule book? How do you enforce a rule book? How do you promote, you know, people to come buy tickets? How do you, you know, whatever, like all the different drama that happens.
You got involved in every aspect of the business.
And I learned every aspect of it. I had, you know, contributed it or like, you know, had to help, right? Like it's small group of people, so you got to do a little bit of everything. So that I learned a lot, and from there I thought I wanted to, you know, learn more. So at that time, Hot Import Nights was peaking. So I jumped to Hot Import Nights. I wanted to learn how they sold sponsorship, how they marketed, because their events seemed bigger. They seemed to be able to get some of the bigger brands and non-endemic brands to support a, you know, an import event. How does that happen? And so I left and went there, worked for them for a little bit. One cool project we did was we were working with Mazda, and when part of the reason why they thought it'd be cool to have me come over was they wanted to do more connection to the motorsport world. How do we bring elements of racing to Hot Import Nights, or how do we bring Hot Import Nights to parts of racing? And we did that. And then after that, myself and Ryan Sage, that's where we met. We met at Hot Import Nights, and we felt that, you know, a lot of the companies that come into an industry, and be it imports or whatever, you know, dirt track racing or drag racing, whatever it is, there's always new companies that want to come in. But I think, you know, the industry or the organizers have to do a good job, or do a better job to embrace them, to help them. Because you don't want to lose sponsors. You don't want to lose people.
It shouldn't be a money grab.
It shouldn't be. It should always be about like a foundation relationship establishment, because that comes later. So no, you don't want to, I'm going to lose one sponsor because I think I'm going to gain two sponsors, or that's okay. You know, it's okay that one goes away because I'm gaining two. No, it should not be okay that you're losing anybody. And we thought that, well, maybe there's some things that we can do to help offer marketing service or just some logistical service for brands that are looking to get into this space and provide service for them. And that was Slipstream Global Marketing. That was our agency.
That was you and Ryan Sage.
That was me and Ryan.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan Sage's role with Hot Import Nights, was that?
He was in marketing.
Okay.
So he managed a lot of the local and street teams. So had a good pulse on like grassroots marketing, and good pulse on, okay, these are the people to work with in this region. These are the people to work with in this region. So Slipstream was doing that. I mean, we were doing events for, you know, people like Mazda was a great supporter of ours at different tracks. So, and again, because of them, they opened the doors to places like Laguna Seca and to Road Atlanta and to, you know, relationships with at that time was the American Le Mans Series, which is IMSA, and to SCCA and all the different entities that they worked with. And of course, as a result of that, when we brought D1 over and D1 decided not to continue in the US and we launched Formula Drift, we already had a great support base of people to go to. So if you look at like season one, right, had four rounds. So Road Atlanta, already worked with them, called, they paved that horseshoe section before they even had one event with us. Awesome supporters. We went to Reliance Center, which was convention center in Houston. We had relationships because of projects we did with them, opened their doors. Irwindale, obviously. And then I think it was, and now I hope I don't get it wrong, I believe it was Sonoma. So, you know, just these places that we didn't burn bridges, good relationships with. Yeah, they opened their doors for those.
So you did Formula D because, and you were able to grow because of these relationships that you had. Take it back to the beginning. Why drifting?
What was drifting to Jim?
So drifting to me was purely just aesthetic, like as a fan. So if you were to test me on a car, probably not at a certain level, technical level. What can I install, build at a certain level? I always get asked like, oh, did you drive before? Were you driving? Can I? Yes. Am I any good? No. But that I think puts a perspective of like, I'm a fan, right? I'm entry level, mid level enthusiast, but I'm a fan. And I took all that on with like from a lens of a fan. So when you say drifting, it's like, yeah, I get it. You know, when you watch it, like, oh my gosh, it's like visually exciting. It's great. So how do we
package it?
How do we package it? How do we make it like easy to digest for somebody that's buying a ticket or whatever coming in to watch, and always take it from a fan perspective?
Here's a good question with the name Formula Drift. I love the name, love the logo. Who came up with the name and logo?
So I think I came up with the name. I'm a Formula One fan, obviously, and you know, we were young and naive, and it's like, yeah. Well, you look, the commonality of this sport is it's drifting. So we called it Formula Drift, and it was like, you know, easy initial FD or like NFL or NBA, like that's easy to digest as well. And we had a designer friend, and he's the one that designed the original logo.
Have you ever heard from anyone at Formula One like, hey, too similar to our name?
No, we haven't. We haven't gotten into that. There's Formula a lot of things.
There's Formula E. Yeah. Even in, all national sports start with national, right?
Yeah.
So since you're a big F1 guy, I think I recall you met Charlie Whiting.
I did. Here.
So tell us about that. Were you able to talk to him, or was that?
I did. I was able to talk to him, briefly though, right? Just, his role is purely a behind the scenes role.
Right.
And that's always really interesting to me, is how things operate, right? How does, a show like this operate? How does the Long Beach Grand Prix shut down streets, right? How do race promoters, or how does all that work? And our discussion was more about like race control, race management, how do they, drivers meetings, and it was a great opportunity.
Was there any words of wisdom that he gave to you that you instilled through the years?
Yes. I mean, it was really along the lines of like, be consistent. And that was helpful because it ties to, experiences that we had. You know, we're newer in the racing world, right? It's a newer sports or newer series. So you're under a lot of pressure all the time. Hey, do you need to bend the rules here? Or, hey, let's not be so strict there. And I think he kind of reaffirmed that, look, you got to stay kind of true. You got to stay consistent. You got to keep your integrity. And it just reminded me of like number of like instances that we were pushed to that. And so it's good that he reiterated and supported, like, look, just you got to stick to your guns.
Your involvement for FD was 19 years?
Almost 19, like 18 and a half-ish.
What would you say was your biggest challenge in those 18 years?
Oh, wow. There were different ones in different kind of phases of the series, right?
One's got to stand out. He's like, there are many challenges starting from scratch. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the challenges come through really just education, and that's a pretty broad statement. But education in a lot of ways, like you have a field of drivers, young drivers that are car builder, driver, team owner in one. So not only are they in their first foray into like formal motorsports, so it's their kind of first time in kind of, formal setting on track, in that environment. It's their first time kind of running their own team, business, balancing the books. And, so the challenge was to do what we need to do from a series standpoint, but also educate and help, these drivers and teams grow in their kind of business acumen and professionalism, and because they have to get to a point where they thrive, right? They have to get to a point where they're doing well. Otherwise, what's a series without drivers being successful, or at least being, you know, I'd be able to pay the bills.
I think this goes along with starting a professional sport from scratch. It's one thing that you're building the business behind the scenes, dealing with the tracks, the logistics, et cetera, et cetera. But then again, your stars of the show are novices and new to the sport as well as you are creating the sport. Right. So you're not only, you're mentoring and not more so growing the talent along with the sport in general. Everything's going together.
Yeah, well, yeah we're almost all kind of learning and growing at the same time.
Right.
And there's like, you know, talk about like growing pains, like literally like every season, after every round, there's something to learn. There's something to improve. And it's just, you know, and you're asking like a challenge. I'd say, you know, one challenging part for a really long time and probably even a little bit now is that because of the newness of it and because it was full of young people, like you could just imagine, right? Like we're, you know, Ryan and I going in and trying to get sponsorship dollars for this sport. And we're walking to new tracks because we're trying to add new rounds of like, what is this that you guys are doing? And who are you? No, trust me. We know what we're doing. Really. So that took some time, right? To get like, hey, we're legit. We're consistent. We're not a fly by night operation. And it's a long game. And so I think we did a lot of things right, and the reputation now is that, okay, they run a good program and it's a quality program, and there's, you know, measurable metrics and results and all that kind of stuff, and they hold true to, you know, rules and regulations and make sure that fans and competitors are safe and so on and so forth.
With so many successful events, sold out events in your time, what would be a memorable moment that stands out?
Oh man. One memorable moment from back is, so the D1 event went off really well, right? That's August 2003. And it was one of the biggest ticketed events at Irwindale since its inception. And so obviously we start the series and we it's almost like we kind of did it to ourselves. We have this cloud, right? The Japanese drifters are the best. The Japanese series is the best. We have this kind of cloud over us, a shadow over us for, you know, a number of years. And first two, three seasons was always about kind of, no, we're different. This is how we're different. It's the same, but it's different. Same, you know, all the time. Are you bigger? Are they bigger? So there's all these like kind of like referencing. But at the end of 2006, our third season, FD has ended the season finale at Irwindale every year. And so season finale, season three, Irwindale Speedway. And, you know, we get ticket numbers that were bigger than that 2003 event. So that one was like, almost like, a
sigh of relief.
Like a weight off, like this, like literally this like monkey off your back. It's like, yeah. Okay, are we good now? Like we're here, we're three seasons in.
What an achievement, right?
We sold more tickets than we did. Look, the US drivers are going to be a draw. They will be entertaining. It'll be fine.
Have you at any point ever heard back from D1GP? Because like, originally they said no to using their name, right? At some point they had to be like, man, we should have let them. They're putting on a great event. We should have.
No, not on a you know, one on one, you know, basis. I don't think it's ever been said. I don't think they've vocalized it. But you know, my hope is that, yeah,
they're recognized.
There's a number of them that recognizes that.
All right.
So
fair enough.
In your career, you know, in your motorsports career, is there anything that you would have changed or done differently based off of?
And
where
this
you
is
are
outside
now.
Of FD in general. Yeah. Your entire motorsports career.
Sure. I think, in, you know, in hindsight, of course. But, you know, at the same time, like, well, if we didn't stumble, you know, along the way, you know, circumstances or like the grittiness or the persistence or whatever it is wouldn't be, you know, in me or whatever. So in that sense, yeah, maybe not, right? Maybe it had to happen a certain way to get to this place. But I would say that I definitely needed, it would have been great if I learned more, you know, from a, like a marketing or from a business operation sense of things, like if I just learned more, because I think if I did, not that it necessarily would have, and maybe it would have changed things, but it would have definitely made a few, you know, operational points in our life a little bit easier. Like I didn't have to like learn as I go and make mistakes as I go. Like if I had a little bit, you know, more experience, everything from finance and balancing the books and that type of stuff, just like a little bit more would have just made those certain days just a tad easier.
Did you have any formal education?
I did. I went to UCLA as an economics major. 2 years in, I realized like, well, oh yeah, economics is, and this is where I say learning, right? Like, you know, my assumption was economics was the same thing as like business management. Like, well, obviously it's not. Well, now it's obvious, but it's not. And so I'm getting killed and I don't really get it and I don't really love it. So UCLA had a Asian American Studies major that just, you know, it was always like a minor and they got, they made it into a degree. It's like, great, let's do that. Like that interests me. So I did that, and by more for like self, in, you know, improvement, self empowerment, self knowledge. But by my senior, it's like, well, what am I gonna do, right? Like, where am I gonna go?
With this degree?
Like, I'm not gonna be like a teacher, a college professor. It's like, shoot, now I gotta find a job. Like, what the hell am I gonna do? And that goes to the internship, where it's like, I'm picking up the phone. Hey.
Because there's no email back then.
Yeah, no, it's not, email.
It wasn't the level we use email today.
I'm going to write letters or whatever. So the easiest thing is like, let's go down the list. There, you know, at that time, a lot of auto manufacturers, especially the Japanese ones, were in Southern California. So it's like, hey, Honda, do you have a summer internship? You know, hey, Toyota, do you have a summer internship?
So you were going specifically for automotive.
I'm like, if I can't find anything that I don't have the experience for, maybe there's a passion play here. And, oh, by the way, when you're at the grocery store, you have all these magazines. I'm going to flip through them. Oh, hey, you know, who is local? Motor Trend, do you have an internship? Road and Track, do you have an internship? You know, and by the time McMullen Argus, which is a sport compact car, European car, still one of my, you know, favorite magazines of all time. Hey, like, well, in Argus, do you have an internship? And the operator's like, oh, yeah, let me pass you to somebody. Passes me to Greg, which at that time was a sales director or VP of sales. He picks up the phone, says, how did you know we have an internship? Like, oh, the operator passed me to you. Oh, well, we were actually just about to post it in whatever, in classifieds tomorrow. But yeah, come on in. And that's it.
I think the lesson learned here is persistence.
Don't give up. Absolutely.
Don't give up.
Absolutely. One sadistic exercise I did, I think at one point, maybe I remember which company, but I'm not going to name. So I was frustrated with one of my roles. And I was like, you know what? I'm young. I'm not married yet. I love Formula One. I wrote every Formula One team a letter to see if they had, you know, a position or opening that I'd be willing to move to Europe.
You ever get a response?
I did. I probably do still have all the rejection letters. I didn't get a response from all, but I had some.
That's actually nice. They wrote you back.
It was nice that they wrote me back. Yeah. And I thought it was really cool. That
you got
it was
a cool letterhead.
It was on their letterhead. Yeah. Exactly.
Imagine that.
You know, like, teams that don't exist today, I got their logo on a letterhead. That's awesome.
You could frame those. I don't even know. That might be like collectible right now.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Original letterhead.
Let's switch it over to your current job and your position here at PRI.
And what was that transition like?
Yeah.
How did you go from co-founder of Formula D to now the general manager of PRI? How and why?
Yeah. I mean, maybe circumstantial again. I think things just align. Look, the series is a turnkey you know, operation, the team, and this is the FD team. There are, you know, there's two employees that have been with FD since day one. Just kind of shows the consistency, the know-how is there, but it's a small team, a small operation. And, you know, I felt that maybe it was getting a little bit, you know, top heavy. There's, you know, we want to give these, you know, team members an opportunity to grow and have more kind of, you know, ownership of different areas or their departments and duties. And yeah, I mean, if it wasn't in the place that it was in, where it was super turnkey, you know, on up and up, we got through the pandemic. 21 was a slam dunk, and 22. And this is after I left, and 22 was even better, and 23 is even better. So it was on an upward trajectory. And so, and then that coinciding with, I had tried to run for CMO board of directors, and that didn't work out. But between, and I'm assuming, right, between working with a lot of, I volunteer for a number of different CMO councils and networks, and knew a lot of CMO staff, and then obviously the board run kind of maybe put my name into people's heads, and you know, I was approached with an opportunity, you know, to kind of oversee the operational team for PRI, and like, well, it doesn't hurt to have a conversation. Let's talk, and here I am.
Wow. So, what is your primary objective for PRI?
Yeah. So. That
and was it just an open position, or were they looking for new blood?
It was an open position. There's a kind of a structuring, restructuring. My self-interest was, I've done drifting. I am in motorsports, but I've done drifting for a long time. It would be educational, informative to work with and network and learn from other forms of racing and seeing how things are done. And obviously, a different event, which is, you know, a trade show and a trade organization. How does that work? But yes, I think the draw is, well, is there something that maybe I can bring? You know, we created something from nothing. FD became the second largest social media footprint of all motorsports, you know, in America, and we were able to do a lot with very little. And still make a, you know, cultural, economic, you know, industry impact. Is there something that can be added, enhanced to what PRI and what, you know, the organization as a whole is doing? And I think that's kind of the mutual desire to, like, all right, what can we do?
In your 3 years now, have you had ideas that are coming to fruition?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a hint, but could you touch on those?
Yeah. So, year one was, I came on board about like September. So we're already like, I think I walked into the office when it was like 100-day countdown to the show. I was like, oh my goodness. You know, so now I'm just like a sponge.
Getting thrown
just,
into the fire.
Yeah, let me sit in every meeting. I just need to learn everything. So we ran the 21 show. The 22 show I had, you know, a little bit more seat time. You know, worked with the leadership team and so forth. And, you know, we introduced PRI membership, and we, you know, grew the show from 21, which is the first back from the pandemic. We didn't have a show in 2020. And yeah, I mean, I have a laundry list of ideas. So to your questions, the esports area is probably the one that I'm definitely, you know, loving a lot, because I remember right in the pandemic, everything was about, everybody went virtual. Every racing series was using whatever platform, from iRacing to Assetto Corsa, and they were racing. And coming out of the pandemic, it was almost like, it didn't take a dip, but it was like, wait, do we not forget how valuable that was? And do we not forget that for, you know, and how come we're not talking about it? And I think about, you know, FD drivers, right? Again, budget range is very different than, say, you know, NHRA team or, you know, whatever. And so what drivers learned during 20 was, I can actually do a pretty good setting of the next FD round I'm going to, and I can drive and get extra seat time before I actually put a car on a trailer, put gas in the gas tank and drive out there. And what great like tool, right? Did it save them a few bucks? Probably. And did it help them in their, you know, performance on track? Probably. So what a great like learning tool. And I'm sure a lot of other racing series, you know, did our drivers do that? And we as PRI, as the, you know, all things racing, really needed to showcase that, or at least start welcoming and bringing that element in. You know, you can go to down next to our Indianapolis office is Delara, and you know you're a tier one driver that you want testing. You know, you can get in now. That's a real simulator. Now you're like fighter pilot training, and fighter pilots train in simulators. So why wouldn't we talk about it? And so I'm really happy that all the various, you know, companies and partners came, and it's a really lively, robust area. People love it there. It's really sticky. You know, people stayed. It's not just a walkthrough. They're staying. So yeah, really happy about that.
How long did that take to walk through that area? Did you walk through that, friend?
I haven't checked it out. I want to check.
You got to get there before the show ends today, because yeah, great job. I haven't played a simulator myself, but I was able to sit down in one for my first time, and man, went. It's a very cool experience, especially the ones, part of my verbiage on this, because I'm not an experienced sim driver. The ones that move around when you're driving, those things are crazy.
Yeah.
But then again, these simulators, for those who have researched them, they're not cheap either, because the ones that they have here are top of the line. The way that some of the vendors were explaining it to me, like these are actually the same simulators that professional drivers, professional NASCAR drivers, et cetera, these are the setups that they're using. Yeah. And to see, you actually had a competition, large, big screen. How many units was that?
16.
16 units.
16 units. And it was,
we're watching what the racers are doing. That was pretty cool.
That is really cool. And you're right. Like some of the real serious stuff down there is like they're giving you full multi-axis movement. And, you know, the response on the wheel is like no other.
It'll snap your wrist if you're not.
It will. If you hang on and you're crashing into a wall, you'll get hurt.
And you had a little bit of everything. They had the equipment vendors. Like, they're like, oh, feel free to touch the steering wheel as it hold the shifter. Like, this is the real deal.
Right.
Like, I totally get this now. And now learning after speaking to so many people talking about, have you been down there? Most of the professional teams invest heavily into this equipment, which is why... No, you're right. There's no reason that it shouldn't be here.
Right.
If not, could have been here even sooner. But now it is here, and it seems like maybe even next year, it's something that might even possibly be growing more.
We hope so. We hope so. I think that's part of these kind of experiments is planting the seed and learning and seeing the response. And if the response is positive, except there's a list of improvement notes. Hey, we've got to win, and now let's look at how to make it better.
One of the cool things about PRI trade shows in general, you have people from all walks of life. And for anyone in the industry, you recognize the influencers. Were there any gaming influencers here? Like, I'm not aware of any, but that seems like something in the future. Like, I know there's a very, in the gaming industry, famous teams, famous players. Is that something that was already here?
I mean, I'd have to admit, that is not a world that I'm very savvy in. And like, that's why I say, luckily we have great partners. We're not pretending like we know what we're doing, but we need the right people to, partner with like this, like we're not, podcasters. We don't have any experience. And do we want to have a PRI, podcast show? Probably, but why not work with, the established, kind of partners in the industry and make space, for
them. Was this your idea too?
Partly, I wouldn't take full credit for this, but yeah, this is fun, right?
Because this is another element that wasn't in the show several years ago.
It wasn't, and it's one of the things that my intent is, people have this kind of stereotype of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to Indianapolis in December, and I'm going to be like, an icicle, and oh my gosh, it's going to be covered in snow, and all. It's not. That's first.
It's actually, this is a mild
This is quite a mile.
We're in t-shirts last night. Yeah, we were at dinner in t-shirts. We're like, it's 60 degrees out.
yeah. It's quite comfortable. I've walked outside multiple times. But really to also, but it is winter here, right? So the weather does, you know, fluctuate.
It kind of brings a drag to you. Like, I'm going to go there. And
there's not a lot, like, what outside area can we do? Like, whatever, drifting demos. We're limited on some logistical challenges.
Yeah.
So how do we bring, I mean, racing is dynamic, right? So how do we bring dynamic elements into the show that still connects to those that are, you know, at the show? Go-karting is one. Sim racing, I'm happy that there's probably a ton of people that have never seen it live in person, stayed and stuck around and watched as these guys drove here. We could have been in a closed door room, but we made it, you know, kind of open, clear acrylic so that attendees can come by, they can hear what we're talking about. It just you know, makes it more lively and more entertaining.
Very cool.
I know we're still in PRI 2023, but do you have any new plans for 2024 already cooking that you could disclose?
Aside from being back, we have a long-term relationship with the city. We'll be back for, you know, a number of years, and there's a lot of new things being developed. There's a new hotel that's going across the street.
Heard about that, the Hilton Signia?
Signia, yeah. In about 3 years' time, we'll add about 800 more rooms. So 800 more rooms that are connected directly. So those that don't want to go outside, you can... Yeah. Walk within, you know, all the sky bridges and get to the convention.
That's something for anyone who's never been to Indianapolis before and why this convention center is so unique. A majority of the hotels, even the mall, parking garages, they're all connected by bridges and you technically...
Walkways.
You don't need to leave.
Yep.
Go outside. So if it is a cold winter, which it hasn't been in the past 2 years, they're... You don't have to go outside. So any complaints that you may have, it's too cold there. Have you ever been?
Right.
Because you don't have to step outside.
Yeah, if that's going to stop you from being here, you're losing out on a really valuable opportunity for your team, for your business. Yeah, there's like 14 hotels that are connected directly to the convention center. Even the convention center, these like hallways, some of them are, you know, open till 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So you can still duck in if you really need to.
Since you're all about learning, and I know we're coming up to time, hopefully give you some time. One or two things that you've learned since joining PRI, since you always have that, I need to learn. What stands out to you that you've learned from being part of this trade show?
Don't be intimidated and don't be afraid to ask questions. It's okay to... not know, and it's okay to even though you may assume that it's a negative response or whatever, it's like being open and willing to receive input and feedback just opens the doors to a lot more conversation. You put the ego aside, you drop your guard a little bit, you take the, you know, any sort of natural defensiveness away. Definitely opens up to just really meaningful, respectful conversations. And you learn a lot along the way.
I think a great lesson that you touched on is to put yourself out there in any capacity. You know, if you're looking for a job or you're looking for a career shift or just
looking for a sponsor, or you're looking for
any type of industry, correct? It's awareness. And kind of, I'll use your example of how you went for the SEMA board. It wasn't exactly the goal that you wanted, but because you put yourself out there, you increased the awareness of people in certain positions that were like, hey, who is that guy, Jim? They might have not heard of you before. You got people talking about you. So just like Francis said, like with sponsorships, if you're not walking the show, people aren't aware of you. If you're not on social media, you're not creating content. You could be the best at what you're doing, but if people aren't aware of that, unfortunately, if you're shy, you're not going to get the best opportunities.
It is right. Yeah. It's scary to put yourself out there. It's scary to be rejected, essentially, you know, so
coming from such a high role, you know, president, co-founder, a lot of the topics that come up between racer conversations are sponsorships, right? Like, hey, how do we get sponsored? And that's one of the big recommendations that we give. It's putting yourself out there, communicating with as many people as you can. It's also, what more do you have other than the car or you being a driver?
Yeah.
And Jim also said the biggest one is relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we were saying, right, we go back to like burning bridges, right? Like,
yeah, don't go in the room and they say, oh, don't work with that guy.
Yeah, or, you know, like just because they rejected you for your proposal, like you shouldn't suddenly now this company, stop. This person is right. Like on my blacklist and,
right.
You know, I'm going to oppose them any way I can. I'm going to, you know, whatever. Like you never know. You don't know the full happenings. Maybe they're budgets are getting, you know, cut or their company is struggling or
don't take it personally.
Yeah. You know, just like, okay, I learned. Okay. Maybe I made a mistake in this, or maybe I should have said it a different way. Okay, cool. I'm going to apply it to next. And every time there's a no, you're learning something from it.
Cool. So whenever if you're watching this and you ever meet Jim, make sure you're personable. You never know down the road. Clearly Jim started off Formula D or drag racing. Media, drag racing, drifting, now motorsports in general as a whole. The future holds what the plans are. And do you have anything else, old friend?
I think we're good.
Jim, we appreciate you.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity and taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
I actually have to give you credit that you're here on the show because we're here because you invited us to be part of the podcast studio.
Yeah, I saw what you guys are doing. It's cool. And why not, right?
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Thank you. Like all flavors and tones and topics of racing.
Yeah, I was looking through the list of different podcasts that were on here. We actually met a few, and because of that relationship, we hey, saw you were on the podcast. I was, oh yeah, I saw your name as well, and they were starting those different conversations. So another great way to network here at PRI. Yeah, the whole point of coming out here. If you're coming out here, don't come out here and just look down and be shy. You got to come around, shake hands, introduce yourself, make yourself aware to people. Yeah. Jim, again, thank you for the opportunity. If anyone wants to follow you on your social media, do you have any handles to?
Simple enough, just Jim Lau on Instagram.
At Brian ESR.
Frankie5 ESR.
And if you like this episode, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. And we'll see you on the next episode.